This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at HomeTeam.com.
And he goes, I did not raise my son to work for somebody. Here I am thinking, I'm actually like me.
Right.
And he was like, no. He's like, I didn't raise you to be an employee. Like, what you're doing now is cute. It's nice. But you got to figure out a way to be an entrepreneur.
Welcome to the Color Money Podcast. My name is Bomi Kiwi, and I am joined today by my great co-host, the illustrious Emric Peace, and by Bua Benitier. Bua is the CEO of the Dumas Collective, formerly known as Dante's Partners, and today is going to be one of the best Color of Money podcasts ever. Put it out there. I'm staying in. I'm putting it right out front. I could not be more excited. I can't be more excited today because I have an opportunity to sit and have a conversation with two gentlemen that have been so impactful in my life. And when you think about podcasts, the opportunity to sit down and get to know people and hear about their journey, these are folks that have been, as you many of you know, Emric was instrumental in my real estate brokerage journey. I incubated KWCP out of his office and was able to grow and launch from his guidance. And as you know, he's been such a great mentor to so many of us. Many of you don't know that, you know, if I had to list the most important people in my journey, Boo would be right up there at the top. And I've had the opportunity to grow and in what we've been able to do in real estate development and investment in wealth building and growth as a leader, as a man, as a business owner. This is someone who I've had the privilege of riding shotgun with for the last two decades. So just a little bit about Bua. We'll probably learn real quickly that he's a special person. This guy has built one of the most amazing companies over the last, you know, number of years. He operates, has financed over 8,000 units. He's done $2.3 billion worth of real estate financing development, all focused on providing affordable, high-quality, aesthetically pleasing places for people to live so they can have access to great housing near where they work and where they play. He's been, you know, featured in all sorts of things. He's been awarded all sorts of awards. He's spoken all over the world. But we're very excited to have him with us today.
So I am, Bua. I am. No, thank you very much. You forgot to add one other thing to the laundry list of stuff about me. It's the fact that we're actually really good friends.
Oh, yeah, that too. That's true. I kind of like the black.
Which to me is the best part is, you know, we've grown from being business partners to also being very, very good friends where we've been able to lean on each other in our journey of being entrepreneurs because there aren't too many people like us. So I'm very, very pleased and I'm very happy of your success and your knowledge.
That's
great guidance to me. So, yeah. So, thank you.
So, speaking of journeys.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about your journey. And sometimes you always take it back to, like, sleeping on a couch. And so, I don't know if you want to, like, if that's where we should start.
Yeah, or there's another place.
We can start back in Nigeria, wherever you want to start.
We can start. You know, lately, I've been learning this word called context. Right? I think context is a word that is very helpful when you're describing a situation such that people have a really good understanding of why and who you are, why you're making certain decisions. So I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs, right? So my dad is number five out of nine men, nine brothers and one sister. And my grandfather was an entrepreneur, right? And sort of did, and most of them, as you know, with most Nigerians, they just don't do one thing, right?
Yeah,
they're like serial entrepreneurs. But the one common thing that all of them did is they all dabbled in real estate. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather owned a hotel, a whole bunch of houses, rental properties. A couple of my uncles did. My dad did as well, but my dad was more into commercial real estate, like office buildings and so on and so forth. And a couple of my other uncles. So, and the only uncle that was not an entrepreneur was a brain surgeon. Right. So
sound like a typical Nigerian family.
So it was hard to like really, really sort of impress. It was a very...
You've been unimpressive your whole life.
I've been unimpressive.
It was in your bones, but you were just unimpressive.
So it was more like, well, the only way you're going to notice me is if I'm a rebel.
For the cause.
For the cause. So that's always sort of been ingrained in me, right? So it was almost like, you know, what can I do? Or what is even available for me to do that is sort of earth-shattering in the midst of all this sort of like greatness? So... But because of that, my exposure to entrepreneurism and success was very, very early. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to see it. I got to understand it. I got to witness it. And I just sort of liked the idea of just being a successful businessman, particularly from what, you know, my dad and my mom did, because they were business partners. So I really, really liked what they were doing. And I was like, this is more of my speed. This is what I want to do. So anyway, so after high school, and it came time to decide what I wanted to do is to follow my education. My parents thought it would be best for me to go to London, like most Nigerians do. And I said, absolutely not. And it was a shock to them. And this is why I really, really appreciate my parents, is they were very liberal. And unlike most Nigerian parents, they just sort of gave an edict and was like, you're doing this whether you like it or not. Yeah. They actually... For certain things,
in certain cases,
they allowed us to have a voice. And in this particular instance, unbeknownst to my parents, they didn't know that when we would travel to London and America on vacation, I was witnessing who I did not want to be like. So there wasn't anyone in London
that you wanted to be like.
That I wanted to be like. Wow. Mm. Okay. But when I would come to the States, I was like, wow, like, there are people that look like me, even back then, even if it wasn't as grandiose and as sort of prevalent as it is today, I just felt like this place is way more conducive for someone like me to succeed than London. London's glass ceiling was just apparent, right? So I was like, Dad, like, you know, if I'm not going to go to the U.S., I might as well just stay here and just be a mechanic.
He came here white-handed.
American is!
I saw the commercial.
Right? So my dad was like, absolutely not. You're not staying here. And we didn't really have any connections here. And I think that was also part of it, too. We didn't have any, like, a lot of our connections. And it was in London. We didn't really have much in the way of connections here. So this 17-year-old man is just going to go to this place and figure it out.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. But luckily, again, because I went to a very strict boarding school, a military boarding school at that, I already learned a bunch of like survival skills.
Self-preservation.
Precisely. Right? I learned a lot of survival skills and I felt like I was prepared. And you know what? If it turns out that I end up becoming wayward or I end up, you know, being a nuisance, I'll come back on
that. Right.
And literally, August 17th, 1993 was when they dumped me in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
straight to New York.
Straight to New York. I did not want to go anywhere else.
Okay.
And that was because, you know.
Why New York City?
It was because of the Cosby Show.
I was joking about it, if I could be my commercial. He really talked about the TV, man.
No. So the story is, if you remember the Cosby Show, mm-hmm. the relationship between Theo and Bill Cosby mm-hmm. was a little frothy. Mm-hmm. And he was the one child that was not as intelligent as the rest of his siblings.
Right.
But he graduated from NYU mm-hmm. on the show. And the way that particular episode was, they figured out a way to capture how proud he was mm-hmm. of Theo, how Bill was of Theo in that episode. And it was a very similar issue with me and my dad because I was not studious in any way, shape, or form in school. In fact, I barely graduated. But I also wanted that same feeling to have my dad be proud of me one day.
Okay.
And Nigerians, you know, they're very, very big in education. So I felt like if I got into NYU and graduated, that my dad would have no choice but to be proud of me. And that's how I ended up going on.
Wow.
And that's the only school I applied to, by the way. I did not apply to any other school.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting. If you look right over there behind the camera, you'll see that I still got my dad looking down on me.
Something
about those Nigerian parents. They're still looking over my shoulder all these years. All these years later. Not even living anymore.
Yeah.
Looking over my shoulder.
Yeah.
So Tell me a little bit about that, like, just pause there for a second, about that drive, like, that drive to want to, I hear it in, like, it's, I think we experience this across many dimensions. You're talking about it in a parent-child dynamic, which I think in many cultures and many places, that's a really strong feeling. But I think people experience it in all sorts of places. This desire, especially as a man of color, to be valued, to be seen, to be understood, to be have worth, to have value. Talk to me a little bit about that, how that shows up for you.
You know,
how that was then and maybe how you relate to that now.
You know, it's funny, right? Like in my lifetime, and I, if I recall, I don't even know if my dad remembers this, and I really, really wish I kept it because I had it on me for years and years and years on end. The only letter that my dad ever wrote me was a letter of disappointment. Right, because I think by the time I came to the States, if I recall, if I remember well, by the time I came to the States, I think my results, my final results came right after I'd arrived.
He got out of the country.
So my dad was just like, he couldn't believe, right? Like, I, you know, this is a man that, like, took time to, like, you know, he would tutor me. He would sit down with me and work on my assignments with me, right? I don't even do that now, like markets, right? Like, it would take the time and do assignments with me. And, like, for whatever reason, that was where he and I clashed. We just clashed because of my inability to comprehend, right? And I also saw how it was with my siblings, because my siblings are wildly smart. I mean, like, they're studious as hell, right? Like, they got all the grades.
I know that feeling.
Right? I knew they could never outwork me. Right. That much I did know. I just needed the opportunity to be able to to prove myself that I was a much, much, much harder worker in the field.
But you do know the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
A students work for B and C students.
That's true. Yes, that is actually...
Because A
that's
students
the case. Yes.
Read the directions. Mm-hmm. B and C students can read the directions, follow the instructions, and execute.
Yeah.
It's a different ball.
And that's just something I didn't know that. But to go to Bo's point, like, for some reason, I feel like, you know, it's funny because I'm going through this period in my life where, like, I really want to be a better version of myself, even now. Like, I want to be a better version of myself now. And if I were to sort of go back 30 years for, you know, 30 years ago, I wanted nothing more than my dad to be proud of me, right? I saw what a father did. I saw what he did and what he sacrificed, right? I was very cognizant. I was, for some reason, I just knew, right? Even when I came to America, I only saw him like maybe once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And I never complained, right? I never complained because I knew what he was doing to ensure that I, you know, I got everything I needed in order to be in the States. But I think that that ability to win over a dad's, like, you know, blessing is something that I wanted then. I probably want it less now, but it's still an issue. Like, if my dad called me and expressed his disdain for something that I did, I take that seriously. Yeah, I take it to heart.
Yeah. It's powerful how much that... both the gap or the desire for that can drive, and also how much, like, having people in your life that cheer you on matters. And I know that when I think about, like, one of the things that I've most respected and appreciated about you, and something I also really appreciate about Emmerich, is, like, to feel like there's people that you can cheer on their success, they cheer on your success.
Yep.
It didn't matter. I mean, shoot, they could have, we first started in brokerage, people couldn't tell me and Emmerich apart. We looked nothing alike. But they'd be like, hell, Bo, you won another award. Oh, Emmerich, you did this. And they were always confusing us. It was really actually representative of how we work. So I was like, Emmerich, here we go. And, you know, you can count on Bua to be your biggest cheerleader when he's on your team. He's the biggest cheerleader for the people that he cares about. And so that's something that I know has always amped me up in a world where I'm trying to make sure I'm doing okay, to have people on your side who are always, like, every time we sit down, it's like, nah, like you're doing it. Like, just don't joke around about it, but it's a genuine respect and appreciation and admiration for what other people are competing. And that's been a big source of energy for me in my journey.
Yeah. But, you know, when you talk about that, like, you look at it and you, it's like, you do things for other people that you won't do for yourself. Like you were saying, that approval.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to do it for yourself, you'd probably be like, yeah, I'll get it done.
Correct.
But you're looking to do it, I want his approval.
Correct.
Now it just amped it up a little bit. Yeah. I'm going here.
Correct.
Oh, that wasn't good. I'm going here.
I'm going. So I'm going to tell you a very interesting story. And this is one of the stories that I really remember about my father. And this is how I got to be an entrepreneur, for real. right? So it was one of the times, one of the few times that my dad came to see me when I was in New York, right? I think this time I may have graduated or maybe on the cusp of graduating, but like I was that kid in college that had a job that required, that I was excited to wear a suit to and a tie. Now you can't even pay me. Right? So like my dad came to see me. So every morning I was like, again, speaking of being proud, right? Like I was proud. Like my dad is there watching me every morning. I put on my jacket, put on my shirt, put on my tie, look in the mirror, looking sharp. And like, so that he knows that like, I'm not a bum. Like I'm actually doing something. But I'm doing something
somewhere.
And like every day, and my dad does this thing that is still annoying till today. My dad will stay with me for a week or 2 weeks and he will observe and he won't say anything until the very last day that he's about to leave. And on the very last day, he said to me, he was like, I've been watching you. And you seem very proud of yourself. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing something. Like, I really felt like I was doing something.
Right.
And he goes, I did not raise my son to work for somebody. And I was like, damn. Here I am thinking, I've actually, like, made it.
Right.
And he was like, no. He's like, I didn't raise you to be an employee. Like, what you're doing now is cute. It's nice. But you got to figure out a way to be an entrepreneur. That's what I raised. That's what I expect you to do. Wow. So when you talk about that
pressure. pressure.
Right? Yeah. So again, I'm like, damn, man, I got to go make this man happy.
I thought again?
I
was good. Again?
I thought I was good. I got
a job. Well, no, like, he was like, no, this is not it.
Expectations.
This is not. And, but also raised. Being deliberate. And I think that's the thing I also tell my friends now who are parents. It's like, no, like, we got to be deliberate with our kids. Mm-hmm. We can't be like, oh, yeah, no. If you want them, because, again, we're building multi-generational businesses.
Right.
And if you want the business to outlive you, you've got to figure out a way to be intentional and deliberate with the kids, unless you want to give it to somebody else.
All right, so I'm taking us back. So you're living in New York.
So I was living in New York. So I'm in New York
now. Going to school.
I'm going to school.
Got a job.
I got a job.
Got a suit and a tie.
Got a suit and a tie.
And dad just crushed your dream.
And he crushed it.
Okay.
Crushed it. So I've been basically pursuing entrepreneurial pursuits since, mm-hmm. right? So
how did you find your way to real estate?
So interesting. So we'll skip a lot of things. So there was a point in time where, you know, I had relocated to the West Coast because I wanted to try something new. The New York lifestyle was just killing me. So I needed to be disciplined and to be focused. And I had an opportunity to open up a department of a company that I was working at. So that, again, sort of fed my entrepreneurial pursuits, which I seized that opportunity immediately. Like, I didn't even hesitate. I opened up the shop and I came across a group of techies that collectively we had won a business plan competition. So we got angel investment money and the company, you know, made a bunch of bad decisions and the company imploded. So for the first time in my life since I was 11, I was unemployed. And then I didn't know what to do. So I was just basically like, you know what? I've got some money saved up. I'm in the West Coast. I'm going to do what people in the West Coast do. You know, just nothing.
Surfing.
I was basically learning how to surf. That's when I picked up biking and a whole bunch of things. And I was just basically availing myself to any and every networking opportunity that presented itself. So I was just basically just exposing myself to meeting all kinds of people from different backgrounds.
You didn't invite your dad to California, though, did you?
I don't think he ever. No, this time I was actually.
Like, yeah, little space.
I was ashamed.
You didn't invite him to California.
I was ashamed. I was actually ashamed. I couldn't like that. So a friend of mine made an introduction to a company that I just launched a business plan. They had just launched. And I was like, oh, you know, send me your business plan and I'll take a look at it. And I read the business plan and I fell in love. Like, I read it and I was like, oh. So I called up the principals of the firm and I said, look, I will work for free. The only thing you have to do is move my belongings from San Francisco to DC and I will work for free for 90 days. And if it turns out that in the 60th day that I'm adding value to your organization, let's enter into a contract. And we'll go from there. And the guys were like, oh, how much is it to move your stuff? And I was like, I think I can negotiate it to less than $5,000. They were like, done. So they got me for $5,000 for like literally 90 days. And I moved to DC and I basically rented a room at a friend's place. And this company basically did lease auditing. Mm-hmm. That's what the company did. So it sort of married my right side of the brain with the left side of the brain, where you basically, like, you guys are in the business of commission-based, mm-hmm. right, real estate activities. And this company did the same thing. So I would read a lease. We would look at the lease and basically juxtapose that with the general ledger and identify a slew of charges that were not meant for my client to pay. Mm-hmm. And some of those charges can be as high as $1 million, right? And we took home 30% of everything we recovered on behalf of the client. And man, it was, I was like, this is ridiculous. All I got to do is read and I find money.
All of a sudden, I want to read.
I have not stopped reading since.
No. I'm studious now.
An incentive. Listen, I got nothing but A's. So I'm like, this is unbelievable. So, of course, but what he ended up doing was it sort of sparked a light bulb in my head. And I was like, well, how do I become that landlord who overcharges tenants? So I was like, now I had like every reason to go back to school. I had every reason to just sort of immerse myself in real estate and know more about real estate and how do you get to be a landlord. So I signed up for two programs. I signed up for Johns Hopkins Masters in Real Estate program, when there were only like maybe five real estate mm-hmm. programs in the entire country, then Johns Hopkins had to be one of them. And I signed up for REAP. Mm-hmm. And those two sort of created a major foundational platform for me to learn more about real estate. And during the course of the 2 years that I was in those two programs, it just became self-evident that if there was ever a point in time to really truly start a company, it was then. Mm. And that's how.
Well, what did you see that made you say this is the time to start?
So I realized very quickly that I had a consultant gene in me. Mm-hmm. I had a very sort of, you know, I just felt like if anyone was good at providing advice or providing guidance, you know, like people used to hire. So, you know, I think when I was working at that company, they would hire, you know, big consulting firms, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't want to call their names, but they'll have big consulting firms to come and, you know, sort of educate them about the company that they're doing, but they never executed. That was not their job. Their job was not to execute. Their job was just to identify all the bad things that was wrong with your company. And maybe if you did this and did this, but at the very end, they had a caveat that said, you know, whatever advice we give you and it doesn't work out, we cannot be held liable.
Even though you paid me.
We cannot be held liable for any of the... So I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you give someone advice and not be confident about the advice that you're giving? So I just felt like if I sort of shared my knowledge about, or the knowledge I had at the time about real estate, plus combine that with execution, then there would be a place for me in this space. Mm-hmm. And that's really, at the end of the day, what... And I noticed then, if I don't know if you recall, 2005, everybody was in real estate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everybody was in real estate. Like, that was like, for some weird reason...
No.
Weird reason. Yeah. Everyone was in real estate, everyone was in development. But I realized very quickly that not everyone knew about the intricacies of it. Mm. And for me, the intricacies of real estate really just boils down to the financing.
Right. Mm.
Right. How you go about financing projects, how you go about ensuring that you're protected from a financial aspect. And no one knew how to run performance. Till today, a lot of folks don't know how to like manipulate performance. And for whatever reason, it was like a God-given gift for me to be able to figure out a way to manipulate real estate into spreadsheets. So folks were hiring me. Literally, a lot of folks in DC just hired me to just basically run performance for them. And from there, now after running all those performers, I had to now also manage their budgets for them to make sure that they were in line with whatever it is that they were doing. And next thing you know, I had like all these clients who were like paying me all this money. And I was like, oh, this is phenomenal. And I went a step further. So because of my consulting experience, I went a step further and basically inserted myself in a number of transactions whereby if we did X, Y, and Z, then we would get a bonus compensation.
Okay.
Which also made it that much more excited to be in real estate. And that's how I started. I tell everybody I started off as a consultant. I really did not become developers until 5 or 6 years later, which is what I call Bo.
It's actually not how it happened. I had to call him.
Actually, yes.
After, he has to call me. After he turned me down. After he turned me down, I had to go call him.
We've been friends ever since.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
So we spent a lot of time just chatting about your background and your journey.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you started Dante's Partners out of the basement of your townhouse.
Yep.
And I remember you're working on your first like 30 unit deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like 8,000 units, like half of America this guy owns. But tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah.
So, because like for a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs, they're earlier in their entrepreneurial journey or they're working through their entrepreneurial journey or they're trying to cap off their entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that like early startup and what do you think it was that you did early on in the company that allowed it to be to achieve the level of growth and success that it has. Because I always feel a little bad because, like, I started a little before Bua, and then he came along, and at first I felt like I was ahead, and, you know, I could show him some things. And then he, like, ran past me, and I was like, oh, hold up.
Now you know how I feel, right? Now you know how I feel. I was ahead, and just ran past me.
You're actually listening to him. That's actually not. It's not the case.
Like, can I catch up now, it's not please?
The case. So the point that folks don't realize is this, right? So I started off as a consultant, right? And I had a brief sabbatical because I got called in to serve. And I got called in to serve the mayor of the District of Columbia to basically help effectuate a number of real estate transactions, which is how Bo and I actually met. Because at the time, and I still believe it to be the case today, the district was very, very, you know, ardent about ensuring that minority individuals were part of major real estate transactions. Mm-hmm. There was a huge, huge emphasis and focus on it then. And that's how I got to meet a lot of my friends today. Is because I was on the inside, so a lot of folks would come in and introduce themselves to folks like myself.
So relationships.
It's all relationships.
Okay.
All relationships. That's how Bo and I met. So Bo had bid on a project, and he didn't win.
So make sure I lost.
However, what Bo is also not telling you is, in my mind, I was like, oh, of all the people that bid, he actually has someone special, because he, at the time, was the only one who had built capacity. And I did not know anybody in 2007 that had built capacity. Everyone that showed up to the table, and majority of Black entrepreneurs in D.C., there are a few exceptions, are still one-man show. Bo was the only one then that built capacity. And I wanted to be sure of it. And I took my time to go see his office up the street.
Came to my little office.
I came to his office up the street, and I was floored. I had never seen anything like it. I was like, whoa, this guy's got staff. He's got a building. He's got computers. This is not hype. I was shocked then, as I am shocked now, about everything that Bo's, and that served as my inspiration.
Right.
And that was sort of what led me to believe that, oh, this is actually possible, right? And I love the modesty. And I think that was also the beauty about what Bo did. You know, like, he was very modest, because at the time, a lot of our friends also decided to break out and start their own companies. But they went and got, like, K Street addresses.
Right.
Right. They went and got, like, you know, addresses in Connecticut.
I'm uptown, stuff like that.
Bo didn't care. So for me, I was like, well, if Bo doesn't care and he's got the most knowledge, capacity, success, like, why should I care?
Right.
Like, let's be frugal, right? Let's make it make sense. So I decided to just start my company in the basement of my house. And this time, it was near the recession, right? And the tenant I had then had lost a job. So I figured no better way to sort of, you know, support the household
right.
by just paying myself rent, right, through the company, which was at the time pretty manageable. And what I did is no different than what I do now. So all of my meetings were held at a cafe up the street, which allowed me to go get some fresh air, right? So I left the basement and I just basically was so amenable to all my clients, whereby all the meetings that we had to take place took place in the offices. No, I was like, I'm your guy. Sure, I'll show up to your office. So I just basically got very, very creative and not have my basement be sort of the be all and all. And believe it or not, I had staff. There was a point in time where I had staff. We actually grew to about 4 or 5 people in that basement until it was like, okay, this is not, you know, healthy and conducive anymore.
It was not the basement. It was Suite 100. It was Suite 100.
It was actually Suite 100. That was the address. So we grew out of that. And again, the plan then was just like, look, we're extremely bright men who are very knowledgeable about real estate finance. That's our thing. But not just real estate finance, but unconventional financing in the real estate space.
Okay.
So if you sort of are getting into any business, and this is, again, this is one of the things I learned from Bo, right? Bo wanted to get into the brokerage space, and he knew how crowded REMAX was. He knew how crowded Century 21 was. And he just went and did something that was brand new and refreshing and wasn't here. When I tell that story, I am blown away by that story. And I witnessed that story,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was like, wow, you can actually figure out a way. Like, no matter how you may think real estate is going or how sort of insurmountable it is, there's still a way and a mechanism to actually be able to create your own lane, which he did. So for me, I was just like, well, I'm just going to create my lane. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, but I have a funny feeling that it does. And that lane is a lane of was just strictly unconventional finance, because most traditional real estate deals are 80-20 deals. So if you're doing an 80-20 deal today, you have access to a debt market and you have access to equity investors. There is zero value that I can add to you in that lane. But if you wanted to cobble 10 sources of financing together on one transaction versus two, I'm your guy.
But for most people that's confused, they can't handle it.
They can't even wrap their arms around it. Right. They can't wrap their arms. So a couple of things happened, right? The market started to take a nosedive.
Right.
And now the 80-20 source of financing was becoming just dried up. So everyone had all these deals that they still needed to activate. And now how else can we move this transaction forward? Well, we know a guy for you. And that guy happened to be.
And Bo became the guy, and everybody was calling him. So tell us a little bit about that.
Like, sure.
I think one of the things that you did so well, which I think is a business strategy that people can think about and like really think about, is you got so good at a niche that you could provide that value to organizations that were much larger than yours.
Sure.
And you became known for what you did.
Yep.
I remember it was like, he started out, he's doing it, and then it didn't take very long till it was like, oh, you've got a deal like this, you got to call Bua. And everybody was calling Bua.
Yeah.
And so how did that impact the growth of your company?
Oh,
see. And then how did you move from that, kind of build the capacity to get a much larger enterprise? Because you stayed in a niche, but you didn't stay, you started out just doing the financing.
That was all we did.
Expanded, yeah.
Yeah, that was all we did was just the financing. So, you know, a couple of things, right? You're making me go back in ways that I'm like, I thought I'd really buried.
Taking up some memories.
So a couple of things happened. It was just me. I was just getting inundated with I was burning both ends of the candle, right? Mm-hmm. I was burning both ends of the candle. And another friend and mentor at the time was like, Boo, this is unsustainable. And I had actually reached a major, major, there's some key defining moments in growing this business that I can point to. And one of them was the fear of employing someone.
Somebody's counting on me now. Their livelihood is all dependent on me.
You would not believe how much hesitation, anxiety, and just trepidation, like how much I was worried about bringing on one employee, and today we've got 100. I'm still like, what happened, right? So with that one employee, you know, thankfully, and again, you know, when you talk about having good people in your lives, you know, someone said to me, was like, dude, how much do you have in your bank account? Right. And you know, we tend to be afraid. And again, it's beauty about relationships. Like, it's like, you know, for some reason, we are very afraid to talk about money, specific money. Right. And I was like, and I tend to hold stuff close to my chest. So I was like, why do you want to know? Why do I have, how much do I have in my bank account? It's none of your business. And he was like, calm down.
Calm down, big boy.
Call me a chump change.
I'm getting somewhere. You know, and now that in fact, I'm laughing, right, thinking about it. And I think it was maybe like between maybe 60 and 80 grand or something like that. And the guy looked at me and he was like, okay. And he goes, do me a favor. And I'll never forget this conversation. And I can't believe I did. He said, do me a favor. I was like, what? He's like, take that money and put it in a bank, a separate bank account. I was like, what? That's my life savings. I'm not doing that. Like, who are you to tell me what to do with my money? And he goes, take that money, open a bank account tomorrow, and put everything in the bank account. And I was like, why? And he's like, because that's going to be your new employee salary for the year. I was like, wait, I'm sorry. I worked hard to save up all this money. Right. And you want me to set aside for somebody that I don't even know? I was like, no. It's not happening. And he goes, do me a favor and do it. The next time we meet, I want to know you've done it. And I went home and I was just like, I may have to end my friendship with this dude. Right? But, you know, again, just sort of someone who is like competitive and just sort of like, let me just try this out and see if they're blowing, you know, smoke. I did. I basically opened a bank account and I put all of that money in a separate bank account. We found my first employee. And I'm telling you, within a year of me bringing on that person, I found myself in a place where I was just like, wait, how did we end up with about 300, almost 400 stacks? And that's when I know you and I've had this conversation about, do we invest in real estate or do we invest in people? And it was at that pivotal moment in life that I was like, I'm not buying any more real estate.
The people are for sale, boo. People are for sale.
We invested. We're not buying. We're invested. Because the math was just way more, just mathematically speaking.
I can do more. If I can double this person, I can double that money.
If I have 50 stacks and I put it into a piece of real estate, maybe in 5 years, I'll get back 100 grand. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But if I have 5 years with an extremely or extraordinarily smart person, and I'm paying them 50 grand.
So let's talk about that, because I know you have really, as your company has grown, you know, you came back to me, you know, one of the things, Boo, is he forgets, he, that same expectation he talked about from his father, he put that on his team, and that, I think, elevated people. But you came back, maybe, I don't know, it's been last many years into it, but you started saying, like, my people are the CEOs of their business.
Yes.
So you talk a little bit about that. I think one of the most amazing things is the way in which people... You've had a lot of people come to work with you.
Yes.
At a fairly young age.
Yep.
Wouldn't have necessarily been the person you would have said is going to be the next CEO of Business X.
Yep.
And 3 years later, they're running a whole business of your company.
Yeah. So you got to understand that, like, my clients at the time empowered me, right? They gave me one or two trials to do something, and I was able to deliver. And since that moment on, they just basically would, you know, leave their entire, you know, real estate holdings for me to manage.
Boo, got it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, he's, you know, he's good for it.
Right.
Right. Like, and that trust and that empowerment really forced me to do well for them. Because if the project did well and they did well, then I invariably would do well. It's just... Unless the person is just shady, right? Which I can't do anything about, but that's not going to hurt my reputation because the reputation is still going to be Boo delivered, right? Or, you know, Dante's partner's delivered. But I know even now, like when clients hire us, like we take that with a serious, serious pride because you've empowered us to go deliver on your behalf. So I figured if we just sort of adopted the same sort of methodology with our staff people, then they would have a huge sense of pride to go deliver on their own. So we would experiment with them on certain tasks and certain projects, and they would, you know, work out. And some of them, by the virtue of them just being in a company early, I would just basically empower them. So I'll give you an interesting story, right? When we decided to start, you know, we have multiple verticals now. And one of our verticals outside of development is property management. And when we decided to start a property management company, I really studied the industry. And the way most property management companies treat their on-site staff, they just glorify therapist, right? Meaning, sit in the office, talk to the tenants, collect the rent checks, harass them, blah, blah, blah. But most of them had zero insight into the financial performance of the site, of the property.
Okay.
Zero insight. None. Like, if you spoke to most of them right now about, you know, how, and but what you don't realize is you have a property that's generating $1 million of income that you've actually left to someone to manage. So let's figure out a way to empower that individual and say you're the CEO of
this building,
a $1 million company.
Choose wisely.
And this is how you're going to be incentivized. Like, you collect the rents, you manage to the expenses. It's all about empowerment. And I think that that model that we tried, you know, it's, you know, for some people it works, for some, for others it doesn't work as much. But I would say that, you know, by and large, that model has worked when we empower folks. Because now it's like, oh, they see themselves as an owner, or they see how they are incentivized beyond their salary. Now they want to do better. They want to make more money, which I'm all for. Because if you make more money, then guess what?
You help enough people get what they want.
Correct.
So here's the question, right?
Yeah.
So now we're talking about this property management. Let's fast forward to right now.
Yeah.
Tell us about where you are. Yeah.
Because we
we're gonna have to close out here soon.
Because we could be into tomorrow right now.
so we're just give us a little bit about what does your business world look like today? Sure. And then we're going to have a closing question.
So what does the business world look like today? So right now we've grown into an amalgamation of companies, right, of which I oversee all of them, right? So we have multiple verticals that include development, property management, construction management, investments, and insurance, right? So my goal is to basically oversee all of the individuals and all of the various projects that fall under each and every one of those verticals. And in conjunction with that, we've also expanded to different cities in America. So we've grown out of the DMV. So we have offices in New York and we have offices in Florida. And my goal, hopefully, before I leave this earth, is to be in other cities that have sort of similar affordable housing crisis where we can go in and add value to those municipalities. So that's basically my world and my universe today. And it's about, you know, a roster of about 100 or so people that are working day in, day out to be able to do all of those things that I just said.
How many units under management right now?
So
I mean, put you on the spot.
Right? No, it's okay. No, it's fine. I mean, like, I think Bo said it, right? Like, we financed and developed about 8,000 units.
Okay.
As a firm, you know, some of those units are units that, you know, we own outright. Or we own, you know, as sort of
in conjunction with
partnership. So yeah, it's been an unbelievable run from going to, you know, 26 units that Bo and I did. When some of them over there, like some of the projects that we've worked on together, yeah, to the numbers that we've done right now. Yeah, it's pretty staggering. No question.
Yeah, but you heard one of our last guests talked about going from leaving the corporate world and going from zero to 150 units.
Right.
And this is like that on steroids, going from I think, we did a 3-unit back in the day. What was that, 3-unit? 2008. So this guy's talking about thousands. He has got to multiply by thousands. But it's quite a journey and a story. So yeah. One of the last things, just to close us out here.
Yeah.
It's been a great conversation, so thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things I've always admired about you was the zest for life. Like you can't be around Bua and be bored. You can't be around Bua and be down. He's got an energy for life. And so I've watched you from when you had nothing, when you had something. That's been a consistent throughout. Tell us a little bit about just like today, having had this experience of tremendous success. How do you define success in your life today? And what does that mean? Like, when you wake up in the morning, how do you say, like, this was a successful day?
Or
this was a successful
life? Man. So I'll tell you, this year, So, you know, I'm going in. This is my 49th year on this earth, so I'll be 15 next year. And this year is the first time that I've actually accepted everything I've done. I've somehow struggled with my success. It's some sort of remorse or whatever, survivor's remorse or something like that. Right? Like, I would say this year is the first year where I'm just like, you know what? I'm doing something right. So one of the things that I tell people all the time, your network is your net worth. The people around you...
I say that all the time.
The people around you, man, really, really make it happen, right? Like, you know, as much as we can talk about, you know, all of the trials and tribulations in terms of growing a business, I would say that meeting people along the way mm-hmm. have been great. So like right now, like I think I've joined several clubs, right, that basically put me in front of folks who have scaled beyond what I've scaled, right? Because I want to learn more from them, right? So I think I'm looking forward to that experience, right? In terms of like being around folks who have built and own REITs, right? Like that is something that I'm really, really looking forward to. So I would say the ability to continually invest in oneself is tremendous success for me. And how do I invest in oneself, right? I'm now being very, very deliberate. That's why you saw how I greeted him when I saw him, because I was upset. I was really happy, but I was upset, right? I hadn't seen him, right? So just being really deliberate in like nurturing like my connections from like, especially like my older connections, right? I'm spending a lot of time right now. Like I think, you know, last year, this year is a year that I'm investing a lot. Like I'm taking the book out of LeBron James' diary to invest a lot in my body. Don't worry, I'm not getting BBLs. It's okay. It's all right.
I hope not.
Right, I'm investing a lot in my body, right? Like, and really, really sort of leaning into wellness in a different way. Not just exercising, but like really leaning into wellness in a major way. I'm also... I would tell you, you know, we have kids that are grown, right? Kids that can talk back to us, right? So watching them and seeing them be successful and helping them be successful, helping their friends be successful and exposing their friends to something other than what they're used to seeing is part of the success. So I would say like, look, any and everything that we can do to expand our community, and if I can be a part of that, that's a win for me in my book.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I heard something, and it's one of those other things. I said, relationships will take you places money can.
Yep.
Somebody coming into real estate development right now, what would you tell them is the best thing for them to start doing when they decide they want to come into the real estate development space?
Sure. So the thing I tell everybody is you got to learn the numbers. Go take as many classes as you need to take to be proficient in real estate finance, because that's where it starts for me. That's where it starts, because if you don't understand real estate finance, if you don't understand vocabulary, if you don't understand how you can manipulate dollars and cents to turn into a physical building, unless you just want to be a builder.
Okay.
If you want to be a builder, then go learn how to build. But if you want to be in a real estate development space, you have to figure out a way to take a piece of property and turn into monetary profits. And the best way for you to learn how to do that is go learn finance.
So learn the language of business. And numbers are the language of business.
And that's it.
And the language of development. There you heard it from Boob and ETA. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Color of Money podcast.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.